Hi, I'm Richard, the founder of 10 Adventures, and you're listening to the 10 Adventures podcast. We are more than just a travel company. We are a community of active explorers who have been inspired by the outdoors. Join me as I sit down with real people to talk about their most epic adventures on this incredible planet. Welcome back to the 10 Adventures podcast. Today we are talking about how you can have a family adventure. And we're not talking about just a regular basic adventure. We're talking a serious family adventure. We're going to talk about how to go on an incredible bike tour with your kids. And here to talk to us about that is Toby and Meg. Hi, Toby and Meg. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for having us.
I'm super excited to learn more. I do tons of like backpacking adventures with my kids. I have never taken them on a bike tour. And so I'm going to be learning from you two today, and I might just end up with a bike tour next summer with them. But first off, you know, what was the inspiration to go on a bike tour with your kids?
Yeah, the inspiration, it's a difficult one because we hadn't really until we went on one this year. But I think we've always sort of been into that side of stuff, traveling. We met in Australia when we were both traveling and sort of our own adventures. And then we sort of had children, which was another adventure, and we didn't want that to hold us back, really. So, yeah, it's something maybe we'd thought about for a while. We'd always gone on holiday with them and that, but we really like the idea. We like cycling. We live in the Netherlands, so we cycle every day anyway. We don't have a car. So cycle touring seemed like the natural option, really.
And how old are your kids?
Our daughter is 5. She's about 6. And our son is 1. He's 16 months. So at the time of the cycle tour, he was 11 months and he turned 1 when we were on the tour.
Oh, this is exciting. So my very first question before going into any details is describe the bike setup when you've got children that young, because that's totally different from, you know, my oldest is 12 where he can ride the bike. And my youngest, he can ride his bike as well. You guys have a totally different setup. How did that work?
Yeah, so it was 2 secondhand road bikes. One from Decathlon and one was, I forget what the brand of yours. Yeah, but I think they were both about 200, 250 euros. We then found a secondhand, Fietz cart, they call it here, bike trailer. Thule, which is a really good brand. So we're lucky with that for 50 euro, sort of nearby. So I picked that up one day in the rain after work. And we found another bike trailer for a dog. We just took our dog with us as well in a secondhand shop at Kringloopwinkel in the Netherlands, a thrift store, I guess you'd call it over there, for about 15 euro, I managed to get that for. So, yeah, and then we picked up panniers, bike bags, and general things like that online in secondhand stores.
So you and your oldest child was riding one of those tag-along bikes, but where was your youngest? Was it with the dog in the dog trailer?
We had both kids in the bike trailer. So I had the kids in one bike trailer and Toby had the dog in the bike trailer. But luckily our daughter, she's 5, but she's quite petite. So she sit like quite happily next to our baby in the bike trailer. it was a bit of a squeeze. Like, it was definitely the last year she could do it, but she was quite happy. Like, and we didn't cycle for more than like a couple of hours at a time. So it's kind of like sitting in a car, really.
Oh, this is so cool. So, you know, leading up to this, trying to figure out where to cycle, did you have a plan as to a route, or was it just, let's see how far we can go each day and play it by ear?
I've always fancied the Rhine cycle route, Eurovelo 15. So for months and months prior to the trip, I was looking at that and researching that, and so that's a great route for families. It's flat, it's next to the Rhine, which is absolutely beautiful, and it's all you go in the summer, it's perfect weather, good facilities, there's always hotels, always campsites, towns, cities, it's not really that rural there, so yeah, it was the perfect place to start, really.
And how long of a journey did you folks do?
All in all, at the end, it was about 3.5 weeks. Or four, 3.5, 4 weeks, yeah.
So very few people get to have kind of that long with their kids on holiday, as well as, you know, kind of in different places. You know, sometimes people might go away and get a villa for a couple of weeks, but changing locations every day. Did that length of trip, you know, change you as a family at all? Or were you already spending tons of time together anyways, and this is just an extension of daily life?
I think we're very lucky with the amount of time that we get to spend together. So we both share like the work. So we both work 3 days a week. We alternate the days when we get to have the kids. So we already spend like quite a lot of time under one roof anyway. But yeah, it was interesting being together all the time, especially when we had to sleep in a tent most nights. But yeah, it was really fun as well. You know, like it's just always crazy. And when you're like out doing something like that, there's no chance of ever having like a bit of peace. And if you know that, then it just makes life so much easier.
I should know that, but every time we go backpacking, I'm like, why is this not tranquil? And I think you just gave me a lesson of like, yeah, the kids are always going to be running around and, you know, screaming, and it's not a tranquil holiday.
No, it's really, but the thing is with when you've got little kids, it's never really a tranquil holiday. Even if you're, I don't know, in this like all-inclusive resort, you're still like on the go 24/7, like either swimming with them or doing something. So you may as well do something that, I don't know, just an adventure for them as well, and a bit crazy, but yeah, just so fun. And like, just so, like our daughter, she learned so much about, because we used warm showers, like this platform that let people, we'd like kind of message people and they let us stay. And it was always like strangers, but obviously we'd met through the app. And our daughter was just like so amazed by these people's generosity, like letting us go into their homes and giving us food and a bed for the night. And they were always so kind to us and so loving towards her as well. And it was just, yeah, it was eye-opening in every possible way for us and for our kids. So, yeah.
I'm really interested. I've never heard of a family using warm showers. And so
I know.
Is there like a whole separate, you know, user group of warm showers that are families doing bike tours, or were most of the hosts really surprised when you showed up with?
Yeah, I think you sort of tended to get more luck from other families or other sort of grandparents a lot of the time whose kids were out traveling. I think, yeah, we're probably more than maybe a safer option when you look at someone like us with kids and dog. So we had luck there. In the cities, it was difficult. Because in the cities tended to be sort of young people in flats and apartments, and we were sort of turning up with two kids and a dog.
Yeah.
So and we sort of tend to avoid the cities. But the ones we stayed at on warm showers were, yeah, it was most of the families.
Yeah, it was.
And they were amazing.
They were so nice.
Yeah. Bike touring community was a big help along the way. Amazing.
Yeah, it just seems so much fun to all of a sudden, you know, you get all these kind of, you know, 20-something to 60-something solo cyclists usually, and all of a sudden you got a family with two little kids and a dog. That'd be so much fun.
Yeah, I think most people said yes because they were so intrigued as to like why we were doing it and like what we were doing. I think they were expecting us to turn up like just completely out of our minds. But yeah, no, it was really nice. And we got a lot of insight as well from the people that we were staying with, which was nice.
Yes.
I think one of them even took you to like their local bar one night, and it was just like, yeah, it was just that, really nice.
With another couple that we stayed with who would end up in Germany by Dusseldorf, and they're having like it was their one night a year, they have a big street party with all the people that live there. So we sort of got to get involved in their street party with all the other families, a big barbecue and beers and everything, which is completely unexpected. Well, that's what you get with warm showers as opposed to a hotel. You get those sorts of things, you know, where you can never predict it.
Yeah, no, I think that's the incredible part. Now, I know what warm showers is, but I bet you a lot of the people listening may not be familiar. Can you maybe just describe how warm showers works?
So I guess a few years ago, it was couchsurfing, but if you don't know what that is, it doesn't help. I guess it's a platform, a website that you can be a user on it. You can have a profile and you can take people into your home to give them a bed for the night or more nights and food and water, albeit. Or you can cycle around the world, contacting these people to stay at their houses and be looked after. And it's essentially cycle tourists looking after other cycle tourists, which is amazing in itself.
And you guys mentioned you're camping. So would you just stay in the backyard and then just use, you know, the facilities inside, or were you actually staying in the people's homes?
Yeah, most of the time we'd try and stay in the homes. That was great when we could have a bed and a shower and everything. Sometimes we stay, we camp in the garden. That's pretty rare. But to be honest, it'd probably work like probably camp two nights, stay in a warm shower one night. Mm-hmm. That was probably the ratio. We'd have to sort of campsite a lot because, yeah, if you're messaging people the same day to stay at the house that night or one day in advance, you know, you ask it a lot. So a lot of the time we did camp, which is...
And that was fine for us because we had all the stuff anyway. So we just wanted a shower, really.
What's a typical day when you've got a one-year-old and a five-year-old? I think all of us know what a typical day is for like a regular bike tour. But I just can't even conceive, like, how long does it take to get started? And then how many breaks do you take? How long of breaks do you take? How long do you go for a day as a whole?
Our like aim was to get up early and just to kind of like smash out as many kilometers as we could. Because I mean, like you probably know, kids' moods are so much better in the morning and they're just like so much easier to kind of, sit there, I suppose. But yeah, we'd kind of do the most of it before lunch, and then we'd have lunch and we'd like sit down and we'd let our daughter go to like a play park. We'd always stop somewhere when there was somewhere that she could do something. And then, so they'd be busy, so we'd eat, and then afterwards we'd kind of finish it and we'd usually try and be done at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, just so that it was like, okay, now we can relax, put the tent up, and then just chill and do what they wanted to do. But yeah, if you think about it, it was really just like going on a road trip because they were in like little seats in the back and they were kind of like watching the world go by. And yeah, we'd stop. Like it wasn't always kind of, as I say, like, oh, we do this and we do that. Every time, obviously, like things go wrong. Everything went wrong. We had flat tires and everything didn't move. But yeah, for the most part, it went to plan. But
and then, you know, sometimes on big car trips, no matter what happens, the kids just aren't in a good behavior. So that's when the, you know, the audiobooks come out. If that fails, then, you know, a movie comes out. Did you have to resort to that? Or were your kids just these perfect kids that were just enjoying scenery going by? I'm starting to get really jealous. Cause...
They are not.
No, like, the ones just woken up now. So she's down.
Yeah, that's why I got off a minute. But we had the iPad as like an emergency resort type situation because, yeah, we were just like, okay, there has to be something, you know, there has to be something that keeps her going for like the last few hours or so. But we also had just like, we had like so many toys, didn't we? Just like most of the trailer was like things to do. And luckily our daughter absolutely loves like drawing and coloring. So she was doing that a lot of the time. And because our son, he was only 11 months, like he was just either asleep because of like the motion, it just made him sleep so much, or he was kind of just watching what our daughter was doing. Or like obviously there would be times when he was like quite moany and we'd stop every so often, but it went, maybe. And now I'm looking back with the rose colored glasses and at the time I would have been like, no. But
some days were tough, you know, they weren't getting on, or it was hot, you know, and they were hot and sweating. And,
that's true.
You know, some days were tough, but if you go away for 3.5 weeks with your cycling or driving or staying in a hotel for 3.5 weeks, you're going to have tough days.
Yeah.
So one thing I always find really tough is getting kids to sleep in tents, especially in summer. You know, you were fairly far north. Was that something that was a challenge for the kids, or, you know, did that go swimmingly and they were sleeping, you know, regularly?
I didn't think it was a challenge because we didn't make it a challenge. So we didn't have the time. We were like, let's not put these kind of things on ourselves. Like if we start saying like, you have to go to bed at this time, it would have just made us stress and them stress. So they just fell asleep when they kind of, like obviously with the baby, it was like I was breastfeeding him. So I would just feed him and then he would just fall asleep. And then our daughter would just kind of stay up and listen to us talking. And
they were fairly tired by the end of the day. Although they'd been sitting down in the trailer, they'd be getting in and out and going to play parks and going in shops and sort of adventuring, I guess, you know, the whole time and new places and that. They were pretty, but at the end of the day, they would, you know, help set up the tent.
Exactly.
Food and lots of tired, but then.
Well, you two are so zen, just going with the flow. I'm so impressed because I've been doing this for longer than you, and I'm still not at that point. I'm like, when are these kids going to go to sleep? I'm so tired, and they've still, it's like they've had four double espressos, and it's 10 o'clock at night, and my wife and I are both ready to pass out. You're also traveling with a dog, and I'm interested of the challenge of traveling with the dog. I didn't even realize you were traveling with a dog as well. But we get a lot of people asking questions. Hey, I want to go do a bike route. I want to go do a hiking route. Can I bring my dog? And I don't know anyone who's done a big trip with a dog. What are some tips and tricks of traveling with a dog on a Eurovelo?
I had a dog behind me in my bike trailer. So I made sure in the morning that I ran him on the lead next to the bike for about 5 kilometers or some more. Yeah, around about that. So he had a good run in the morning.
It's important to say he's a border collie, so he is.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
He's not just like some tiny little like fluffy thing that doesn't really run. Like, he is kind of built to be a farm dog, so he's used to that kind of distance.
And then I do that again in the afternoon. And sometimes. He's just one of those dogs that if he's with us, he's happy. And he had a little hole there that you could zip, and he could put his head out of the bike trail and look around. So as long as he was with us and well-fed and watered, then he's happy.
Hey everyone, this is Richard, and I just want to take 30 seconds to let you know that if you are enjoying these stories and are interested in embarking on your own adventure, then head over to 10adventures.com. At 10 Adventures, our specialty is booking private and custom active holidays. Jump straight from dreaming to doing without any of the hassle of travel planning in between. Join thousands of other travelers who have already booked with 10 Adventures to destinations in over 85 countries and experience more of what our planet has to offer while making memories that'll last a lifetime. Now back to the podcast. So going on a trip like this, you mentioned you cycle regularly, you live in the Netherlands, so it's, you know, the world's best cycling infrastructure. But did you do any specific preparation for doing this type of trip? Like just hauling a trailer and hauling all the gear, it's different from, you know, biking around town to some extent.
We're both pretty active. I mean, I cycle on the road bike regularly, and I'm a sport instructor. That's my work in a prison. So I do sport all day, and Meg's also pretty fit. We did a couple of rides, didn't we?
Yeah, we did like a few test rides. I did with the kids in the trailer a couple times, but I don't think anything could have prepared that for the actual adventure. I definitely got so much fitter as the weeks went on.
I must say physically, because we weren't doing massive distances a day, 50, 60, 70 kilometers, physically I wouldn't say it was too demanding. It was flat. It was pretty flat. So I wouldn't say it was too physically demanding. That sense, more mentally than anything.
But pulling a trailer, I know we used to have a trailer for our bikes with the kids, and you know, riding my bike with some bike packing gear and then pulling a trailer with two kids is really, really different. Did that not cause any issues, you know, day two or day three with just like the different strains on muscles? Or were you guys kind of, you know, just, yeah, you're in good shape, you're able to do that right away?
Yeah, I think definitely in the first sort of week or so, I remember, I think we were pretty sore, legs pretty sore. And maybe we shed some weight from the trailer, from some of the bags. We realized maybe we'd overpacked. I think the first sort of week or two, we had to adjust. But all in all, I think we sort of, yeah, like you say, you develop it as you're doing it, really. By the end of it, you know, you think it's sort of the norm. But yeah, well, I think when you start the first week or so, that's when you feel it, so to speak.
And you mentioned earlier, you guys got a bunch of used gear, including your bikes. And I know I talked to lots of people, and they feel as though I want to do that, but I need to get 8 grand worth of gear with panniers and a great bike, specialty touring bike, and then I got to get a fantastic child carrier. Using used gear, was there any disadvantage? You know, it seems like it's something everyone should be doing, but so few people are willing to buy used gear for when they get into bike touring.
I mean, obviously I'd love to do it with 10 grand bikes and all that stuff. It probably would have made it a bit easier. But disadvantages, yeah, okay, we probably weren't as fast or, you know, as we maybe could have been. But we sort of didn't have a choice.
Yeah, like people do crazy things on like bikes that are just don't even have any gears, you know? Yeah. There's not really any excuse for, like, I mean, obviously it makes things easier when you have like brand new things. And but the trouble is if you start saying like, oh, I can't do this until I have this, you just never will do it because you'll never have enough, you know? And we were just like, right, we have the necessities, let's just go. Like, we can't just continue. Because we did get to that stage where we were like, right, we need to have, like, this really expensive thing. We need to have the best panniers, like, all these stuff. But really, like, as long as your stuff works, then, you know.
I saw a good quote when I was trying to set stuff, or we were trying to set stuff up for it, was the best gear for an adventure is the gear you've already got.
Mm-mm.
And that's perfect, really. It sums it up. You know, you shouldn't... What great advertising spin is thinking that you need a 5 grand gravel bike to go and ride on gravel. But these gravel bikes haven't been around since the last sort of few years. And like Meg says, you know, people go around the world on regular bikes, you know, back in the day. And yeah, it's a bit of a it's a bit of a lie to think that you need all these fancy things to go on an adventure, you know, whatever you've got is enough. Go out and do it, and then you'll come back and realize, okay, next time I need this and this and this, and you slowly add to it. And it's all part of the adventure, you know?
I love that message. And, you know, a big part of what I've been doing the last few years is just trying to buy less stuff, because it's nice to get a new set of skis or a new bike. But then it's like, oh, I really like my old skis. I really like my old bike. And, you know, how much better is it going to be? As you guys say, it's probably a little bit better, but just the hassle of owning more stuff and having to spend the money. And then just the environmental footprint of buying all this stuff, you know, it seems crazy, but if you want to explore the world, having less stuff makes it a lot less easier, or makes it a lot easier compared to, you know, having a house full of crap.
Yeah.
And with secondhand stuff too, like people already have this stuff, you know, like people have stuff they don't need and they just give to these places, like these secondhand like thrift shops. We go into a thrift shop and we just found everything we needed, you know, it's already out there. We don't need to be like asking for demanding more stuff, because it's just already there. You just have to know where to find it.
I think what we're lucky with is that we live in an area that cycle touring is a big thing, and people buy a lot of gear for cycle touring, and then maybe they realize they go on one trip and they realize, oh, cycle touring's not for me, and then they put it online for sale. So I think that I think that we're quite lucky in that respect, but right here that it is a popular thing to do. But maybe if you're living in like in the city, America, maybe it's not that big of a thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, reflecting back on the first trip. And if you were to talk to someone who's just thinking of doing a trip with their kids, what are the biggest challenges of doing a trip like this with kids?
Not being able to relax. You're just cycling all day, and then you get somewhere and you're putting the tent up, or you're getting some towels or something. And then not being able to then unwind and think about the day, and think you just have to be going 24/7, and it does get a lot.
I think we put that on ourselves, or I put that on us. I planned a route of like 1,000 kilometers to do in three and a half weeks, which was crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, in 3.5 weeks, you should maybe do, I don't know, a 600-kilometer cycle. And my advice would be, say, cycle 2 days, rest 2 days, and go on that sort of thing, or cycle two, rest one. Make sure you've got a rest day in there, because it's your holiday.
Mm-hmm.
It's your big summer holiday. You need to be relaxing as well, which we were at the start. And then as time went on, I was looking at it and thinking, oh, we need to get to Zurich by this day, because that's when our training back is. Now we're going to increase the pace and that. So
yeah,
I definitely say whatever distance you're thinking of, dial it back. You're just thinking about enjoying it. Dial the distance back.
Yeah.
And take the time, you know.
On kind of the flip side, having done one of these, what are the benefits for you as a family having done this 1,000-kilometer, 3.5-week journey?
Just like so many. Well, like I was saying before, the experiences that our 5-year-old had, where she was meeting all these new people, because she was a bit of a COVID baby. So yeah, a lot of her toddlerhood was around COVID times, and she didn't really get out much and see other kids. Then we moved countries. We moved from the UK to the Netherlands. So there was all these kind of big things happening, and she was just like kind of with us, wasn't she? She was like part of the bubble. And then doing this tour, I think she just saw the world open up a bit more and realized like the kind of new people weren't always scary as well, because that's something that she struggles with too, a bit like, I suppose, timid sometimes towards new people. But so that was really amazing and enriching for her. The baby was just happy to be with
us.
He was just loving it, to be honest. Like, he was just absolutely filthy all of the time.
I think, like, what you said earlier is, you can be led to believe nowadays that sort of people out there in foreign countries are bad people and you should be scared of them, and anyone who doesn't speak your language is a threat. Whether, you know, we want to show our kids it's the opposite, and that 90% of the people out there are good people, and they'll take you into their home and they'll feed you and look after you, and we do the same to other people. And so I think that was a big thing for us, to show our oldest that people are generally good people. The world's out there, and go explore it.
Yeah, I always think traveling is, you know, for me personally, one of the best educations I got was just exploring different cultures and people and understanding, oh, they solved the problem we have back in Canada, totally different, but it works. And, you know, you just learn, oh, wait, there's, you know, we all kind of grow up thinking, oh, this is the way the world should work. And as you travel, if you have an open mind, you realize it's different. I think when you can give your children that, it's just so valuable that, you know, they can't learn that in school. Looking into your next bike tour, I assume there will be a next one, but are there any big changes you would do? And, you know, what are some of the mistakes you made as a first timer?
So many. I think the mistake that still annoys me to this day is we had, the dog bike trailer that we took, it didn't come with like any waterproofing at all. And we knew it was going to rain. Like, it always rains. So I like handmade this like waterproof cover for it, and I spent ages customizing it to the dog trailer, and I was like so proud of it, and I was really excited to take it, and we left it at home. For the first like week or two, everything was just getting soaked, and it was so irritating. So I think the big thing is make sure everything is completely waterproof. Can you think
as to what we'd like to do next? I'd like to cycle every country in the world. I'd like to cycle around the world with the kids. I don't know when we're going to cycle. The Eurovelos are amazing. It's an amazing system that's been created that, you know, there's these routes all over Europe that are connecting with sort of cycle paths and rivers and roads. And so I'd like to tick off more of them.
Yeah.
Like to go up north towards sort of Norway, Sweden, Denmark. Cycle there. So
I think it's more hilly.
I think we'll stick to rivers for now. It's flat.
But like mistakes wise, I think
as the kids get old, I think a different set. Our setup now was what it was, but I think next time we'd maybe look at a setup with a kid on the bike as opposed to pulling them both. Would I take the dog next time? Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. Yeah, it's another sort of thing to think about.
I think also a really big thing that we would probably change, we were saying this almost every day, was to allow more rest days. Just so you can enjoy where you are as well. You were almost cycling every day, especially towards the end. We just didn't have any breaks really, and it would have been nice to be able to just kind of stop and look around a bit more.
More than we did.
We just had so much going on all the time. Like, as you can imagine, with the two kids and the dog, we were just like literally just on survival mode sometimes, that we just didn't manage to kind of enjoy it as much as I wish we could have. So yeah, I think next time, plan more rest days.
And you mentioned earlier the superpower of parents traveling is finding the local park, and that's like the only time to get peace and quiet. You talk about tranquility, and I always hope, we're the tents up, let's just read our books, let's look at the lake, let's just chill out, and then the kids go crazy. But when they go to the the play area, then you kind of just sit there and you look at all the other parents, and we're all like, we've just been beaten up looking at these kids who are still running around. And that's on a bike tour. It's even more powerful because they've been in their chariot all day. this has been great. You've been super inspirational to me, who's never done this with the kids. And I'm going to see if I can get one overnight this next summer with the kids, see if we can, because all our kids can ride bikes. And yeah, you've inspired one person with this. And just the, you know, approachable ethos of, you don't need $1 million, just take what you got and go and give it a go. I think that's really incredible, Tony and Meg. So I want to say thanks for coming on the show.
Okay, thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure, thanks.
And if people want to follow along, where can they find you, Toby or Meg?
So we have an Instagram and it's Twigs on Tires. The Twigs with 2 G's, that's the surname.
Yeah.
And on Tires, yeah, that's us.
And with that, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. We'll be back next week to explore the world and hear about more epic adventures. Start planning your own adventure by visiting us at 10adventures.com and listen to other episodes of the 10 Adventures podcast on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you find your podcasts.